This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown. Thank you so much for joining me. And I am super amped because I get to share another fantastic Ironman World Championship qualifier and racer story with you today. I love these stories and how people got into the sport and some of the challenges they've had to overcome. And today we head to Melbourne in Victoria in Australia to catch up with Mal Joslin to find out a little bit about him and how he got into the sport and some of the things he's chasing, some of the goals and ambitions he's still got left in the sport. And that's all on the way shortly. Before I do touch base with Mal, though, a big thanks to the sponsor of this edition of the Kona Edge. Funnily enough, they are based in Melbourne. I'm talking about Wheel Science. If you're looking for high-performance race wheels, and they might be based in Melbourne, but they ship worldwide, so it doesn't matter where you are on the planet, they will get a set of race wheels to you, and they are fantastic. They come with a lifetime worldwide warranty as well. So, yeah, you can rest assured you are getting great quality wheels at a fraction of the price of those big-name brands, but you get all the performance along with it. So go check them out. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels. And if you use the coupon code KONAEDGE at checkout, you'll get 10% off your order. That's KONAEDGE, all one word, and the URL to get to is thekonaedge.com/wheels. It's as simple as that. I've put it into the podcast player that you're listening to this as well, right below the podcast. There's a link that says check out Wheel Science. Click on that. It'll take you straight through the website, and you can go have a squiz for yourself. We head to Melbourne in Australia now to catch up with Mal Joslin. Mal, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Brad. It's great to be with you.
Mal, I'm super excited about this chat because I've got friends in Melbourne. I do a bit of work with folks in Melbourne. I've never been, but I believe it is one of the most amazing places to live and train, and particularly if you're outdoorsy, and obviously triathlon, you need to be a bit outdoorsy, but there are worse places to live on the planet if you are into triathlon, I'm sure.
I've had the pleasure of traveling a fair bit, Brad, and Melbourne's a great spot to call home and come back to, so we got a pretty good climate for training, and we've got the bay not too far away for a good, you know, open water swim, and plenty of mountains around if you want to get into the hills, and obviously plenty of running. So, yeah,
absolutely. Mel, tell
can't
me,
complain.
Yeah, I'm sure. Tell me a little bit about you from a sporty perspective before triathlon and growing up. What were you into?
Yeah, well, for some of your audience, I suspect, Brad, you'll be very familiar with cricket. I played a lot of cricket as a kid.
Yep.
And a fair bit of running and golf. And it wasn't until probably late 30s that I got into more endurance sports and started running longer and a few marathons. And I always enjoyed cycling, but I didn't, you know, do anything serious. I certainly didn't compete, but always enjoyed getting out on the bike and was never a swimmer. So triathlon didn't really play much of a part. And I did a couple of corporate triathlons with work teams, you know, during my 30s, and really enjoyed them, but they were, you know, under an hour and it was all over pretty quickly. So but after enjoying, you know, long runs and some long bike rides, I decided to give it a crack. So
brilliant. And from a cricket perspective, were you any good playing any representative cricket?
I did play a little bit of representative cricket, but not nearly as much. My brother played cricket for Victoria, so he played to a pretty good standard. And I think at my 21st birthday, it was one of my dad's disappointments that I'd never made 100, but I did make one a couple of years later. So.
I'm hoping, I mean, in that case, were you a batsman or a bowler?
I focused mainly on wicket keeping, actually, so I spent a lot of time behind the stumps, and but I made a few runs. So
brilliant. Good stuff. Well, Mal, tell me, I mean, you mentioned the corporate triathlons and the shorter stuff. When did you get into the longer stuff?
Yeah, so I first 70.3 was 2010, headed up to Canberra and had a race up there, and didn't really know what I was doing, to be quite honest, Brad, but had a cracking time. Thankfully for me, not being a swimmer, the swim was cancelled, and we had a bit of a run bike run which suited me, and I did all right, and was, yeah, pretty keen to go back for more, so went jumped straight from 70.3 up to an Ironman as my sort of second Ironman race.
Mel, tell me a little bit about the sort of endurance scene in Australia. I mean, here in South Africa, everything's endurance-based. In Oz, is it... I mean, is it like the longer stuff... Is that almost seen as normal, or are you seen as a bit crazy, a bit touched to be doing the long stuff?
No, look, in the triathlon club I'm in, we've got a really good mix, actually, of people doing, you know, short stuff, plenty of sprints, and people doing longer stuff. So it's not all about long-distance events here. I think I'm probably one of the few people in the club who really focuses only on 70.3 and Ironman. I very rarely do anything, you know, very rarely do an Olympic or sprint or anything like that now. So,
isn't that so often?
I am the exception, I would say.
Isn't that so often the case? Like, once you've done a few of the big ones, you like won't even get out of bed for an Olympic.
I just don't know that I'm fast enough anymore, to be honest, Brad, to be doing that sort of stuff.
I love it, Mel. Tell me about the decision to do the long stuff. I mean, was it for you? The natural progression? Did a lot of thought go into it, or did you just go, you know what, that long stuff looks really cool, I'm going to do it?
Yeah, I think the 70.3, the half in Canberra, was always a stepping stone. I always wanted to go longer, and I'd done a few marathons by that stage, and I knew I enjoyed them, and I knew I'd have no problems with the bike. So the scary bit was the swim, but we managed to get there. So yeah, I've done, I don't know, what have I done? 7 or 8 Ironmans, 8 Ironmans, and probably as many halves in the last 5 years, I suppose. So, yeah, enjoy it.
How many times after a full Ironman have you said, I'm never doing that again?
I'm pretty sure the only time I've said I'm never doing that again was after Kona, actually. So, and I've changed my mind about that one. So,
well, tell me why? What happened in Kona where you said, that's it, I'm not doing that again?
Ironman's always a tough day out, Brad, but Kona was very tough. It was, I think it was the heat really on the run that it really dented me, probably not so much physically but psychologically. You know, I was shattered by the end, and I came good with about 2 or 3 Ks to go, but and my finish wasn't too bad, but the run really hurt.
It's interesting you say that, Mel, because I was chatting to somebody last week, funnily enough, here on the podcast, and we were talking about doing a race like Kona at the time of the year when it is, being in the Southern Hemisphere. And I know the Australians have the same issue as the South Africans do, and I'm sure the guys from South America have the same sort of concerns. And people look at us here in South Africa, and it's probably exactly the same for you in Australia, where they go, but oh, Australia is such a hot place. You must be loving this. But they seem to forget you're coming out of winter having to train and then go into this hot box, essentially, to go and push yourself as hard as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're training through, if I do an outdoor run here in winter, it's, you know, be sub 10 degrees most of the time, because I do most of my training either early in the morning or late at night. And to go from, you know, 5 degrees or something doing a run to running in Kona is a pretty big difference. But I did do a lot of heat training. I had the treadmill set up somewhere I could get it hot, and the bike trainer somewhere I could, in the laundry where I could get it nice and hot and humid. And but I think there's a bit of a difference between training in the laundry for a couple of sessions and getting out there and doing it on race day.
Yeah, it is a totally different beast. Can you remember your first full distance Ironman?
Yeah, it was in Port Macquarie, Ironman Australia in 2012. And I had compared to what I was aiming for, I thought if I did sort of sub 12, I'd be happy, and I had a good day out. Had a decent swim, nothing special, and the bike, didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. The course there's a little bit hilly and the surface is a little bit rough, and so scraped in under 6 hours, which I was happy with, and then I had a really good run. And so I was, you know, a bit over 11 hours, which at the time I was absolutely stoked with. So, but I still had plenty of room to improve. I'll tell you a funny story though, Brad. I think my transition one took me about 8 minutes. And the next day, of course, as you do after an Ironman, like look back at the day and work out where you can take some time out. And so I'm Googling T1 transition times. And the first website that I found said, you know, less than 3 minutes, excellent. You know, 3 to 4 minutes, good. Was, you know, 4 to 5 minutes, you know, need to improve. More than 5 minutes, hair and makeup, So I knew immediately I could take a bit of time out in a few places. So.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, in my office where I record, I've got a picture up on the wall of my first. It's got my finishing certificate photos, and I just leaned over as you were saying that to see what I did in T1 in my first one, and it was just over 8 minutes as well. So,
there you go.
Yeah, I think I might have built a sandcastle in that one. As far as the decision to then start looking at Kona, when did Kona first get onto the radar for you, Mel?
Yeah, so I did Port Macquarie, and then they had the first Ironman in Melbourne, actually, which was announced just before I did Port Macquarie, but that was only 6 weeks out or something, so I was definitely not going to change the plans there. And so I did Ironman Melbourne in 2013, and the swim was shortened in 2013, so it was came in sub 10 and really happy and started to think maybe I could get close enough, and then had a couple more Ironman Melbourne sub 10, and but I didn't really look like I was going to get the probably 20 or 30 minutes off that I needed to. So, but it was around that time, 2015, I thought if I do the right things, I should be able to take another 20 minutes out. I should be able to get there, but I need to do things differently.
What were the things you needed to do differently?
Well, the number one was get a coach. Up until then, I was doing everything myself, writing my own plans. I kind of thought I knew what I was doing, but I realized to make some sort of improvement, I had to change something. And my swimming wasn't really improving. My bike was pretty good, and my run was pretty good. So at that stage, I was thinking really, the guys who were qualifying for Kona in my age group were swimming probably 15 minutes faster than me. And I thought I needed a swim coach. And, so I set about finding a coach who was a triathlon coach, but someone who was a really good swimmer and a really good swim coach. And so that's what I found. I think the rather, ironic thing is my swim's improved a little bit, but actually what's improved the most is my bike and my run. So, focus on the strengths, they say, and I think that's a really good message.
I mean, for you, obviously at the time when you were looking, you were looking for someone who was, first of all, a triathlon coach and then had that swim sort of experience. What advice would you give to someone who's sitting at the moment? They've sort of put their toe in the water, so to speak, and they're trying to find their own way, but they're looking for a coach. What outside of those two things, I mean, what do you look for in a coach from a personality perspective, the way they do things, communication? What's important to you?
Yeah, so I've been with the same coach since I first took on a coach in 20 that must have been early 2016, and I guess what I was looking for at the time was someone I could relate to, someone I could trust. I definitely knew I was looking for someone who had a lot of experience and had trained people at a good level, and someone who knew how to get people to Kona, and but someone who could really help me with my swimming, and. Now, my coach is someone I listen to. I pretty much do exactly what's in the plan, and I trust him. And we have some discussions about goals and what we're aiming for on a, fairly regular basis. And some of the time I'm trying to push him, we're getting into after I'd qualified for Kona, I said, I want a top 30 at Kona. And he said, oh, really? Your first time round? Not sure if it's possible. But we worked out what we needed to do to get close to that and had a crack. So look for someone you can trust.
Yeah, I mean, trust is a big one. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that a lot more as well. And just doing what they tell you to do and not necessarily try and wing it yourself, even though you have a coach. But talk to me about you made the decision. You need to get a coach. You've got to make up 20 odd minutes. How long was that process from deciding to get the coach to actually qualifying? What was the time frame that you were looking at? Or how long did it take you?
Yeah, so my aim at that stage was, this was early 2016, and I thought a good stepping stone to get to Kona would be to qualify for the 70.3 Worlds in Mooloolaba, which was September 2016. And I had a qualifying race lined up for Vietnam in May. So I gave the coach 3 months to get me to, you know, a qualifying time at in Vietnam in May. And so we got to May and managed to qualify there, which was fantastic. And then on to 70.3 Worlds, had a good race there. And, you know, that was the building blocks of saying I'm ready to, you know, step up to a much faster Ironman now and then look for qualifying races to get to Kona.
As far as the sort of onslaught to Kona and you saying like you want to go in there top 30 in your first time out, talk to me about the way you approach a race like that. I mean, obviously you didn't go in there and say, you know what, I've qualified now, I want to go and just have a bit of a party and soak it all in. You had ambitions. Do you think that is the right way to go? You have to go into a race like Kona with some solid expectations?
No, you definitely don't have to, Brad. And a lot of people have tried to, you know, share the idea that your first time in Kona should just be about enjoying the experience and soaking it up and learning. And I think, you know, that's not a bad approach. I like to set goals and I like the idea of having something specific to aim for. So, you know, every race I go into, I'm setting some goals for myself, whether that's something that's related to a specific leg or to an overall time or place or whatever. But that's all part of the motivation of training for me.
Now that you've changed your mind about the I never want to do that again, talk to me about how you do the second time round onslaught.
Oh, yeah. So I think second time round, I will definitely go into it with a better understanding of what's required for Kona. And I think to be truly competitive at Kona, I probably do need to improve my swim. I need to come out earlier on the bike, and so I'll put a bit of time into improving the swim. I'm going to go back to doing 70.3s for a year or two and try and get that pace up, and then get out earlier onto the bike and be further up the road on the bike and with the faster groups and so on before getting onto the run. And the run, I think for me in Kona, was all in the mind. You know, I let the heat get to me, and you know, I still had a good day and I still achieved my goals, but I know I can do better.
Do you think that was more of a mental thing or a physical thing?
I definitely think it was a mental thing. I think, you know, I let little things that wouldn't normally bother me. You know, blisters, for example. Normally, they just wouldn't. I wouldn't even think about it. And the heat. I got to Kona, I think 9 days before the race, and you know, I'd been out and done a few training runs, and actually felt pretty good in the heat. But on the day, you know, the sun was out. There was no cloud cover, which there had been in the week before, and you know, I think that I let that affect me, and you know, and I think that played out in the way I approached the run.
Now, what makes that race so special, Kona? I mean, obviously, there's lots of races all over the world all the time, but there's just something special about that place and that race.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only one. You know, it's the world champs. It's just a fantastic experience, I think. If you're racing a race just for the fun of it, actually there's some, you know, other races around. I qualified in South Africa, and the atmosphere on the run, the crowd support in Port Elizabeth was just fantastic. You know, Kona, you've got a lot of spots where there's not so many people around, but it's Kona, and that's all part of the enjoyment and part of the atmosphere and part of the spectacle, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've raced a good few now, and you mentioned Ironman South Africa. Out of the races you've done, what do you think, out of those races, which of those races do you think is, you know what, everyone needs to do this race? It's incredible.
If am I allowed to say Challenge Roth, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely.
I had the pleasure of doing Roth this year, and it it's a fantastic race. I mean, the atmosphere, swimming in the canal, you've got, you know, thousands of people meters away from you swimming up and down the canal. And on the crowd, you're riding through the Bavarian countryside and villages, and a whole lot of people out with steins of beer and barbecues on the side of the road cheering you on. And then the run's nice and flat and fast, and the crowd again on the run is just magic. So fantastic atmosphere. I mean, the run in South Africa was brilliant, and absolutely loved that. You know, there's lots of races have got pros and cons. The swim in Busselton out around the jetty is just absolutely beautiful. The swim in Kona is beautiful. It's like swimming in an aquarium. So, but for the whole event experience, I'd have to say Roth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. I mean, every race has got something special, and each to their own. But yeah, I've heard amazing things about Challenge Roth, and I think everyone who's done it will agree it is one of those races that everyone should do at least once in their lifetime.
Absolutely a bucket list race for sure.
Now, talk to me a little bit about life outside of triathlon. What do you do for a living? What's the setup outside of the sport?
Yeah, I trained as a pharmacist many years ago, and so I've always liked the sort of science element of triathlon. I like getting into what's the physiological process and what's your body doing and what's happening with sugars and electrolytes and all that sort of stuff. So having that sort of health background, I think, has sort of helped me along the way. And now I own a digital marketing business. So we do a lot of online education and digital marketing for healthcare companies.
I was about to say, man, how did you end up from pharmacist into digital marketing? But I'm glad you finished that sentence, that there is a bit of a connection.
Yes. I worked for a big pharmaceutical company and moved through, you know, a variety of different roles into marketing and digital marketing and online education and over a period of many years. So started the business about 8 years ago and have the pleasure of working with lots of different brands and clients and doing, you know, websites and apps and online education campaigns to support doctors and patients and nurses and pharmacists and so on. So, yeah, it's a great industry to be in. I love the idea that the things we do help people.
Awesome. Mel, and then getting the balance between sort of work and sort of personal life and triathlon, how do you handle the juggle?
I am exceptionally fortunate having a very supportive wife and family, Brad. My girls now are a bit older. They're sort of 16, 17 and 19. And so they're, you know, looking for every opportunity to travel and go to a race and come along and support. So they've had the pleasure of traveling to, you know, various places around Asia and so on for races. So they're very supportive, and my wife's always the one asking me in the morning what training's on for the day. So you know, managed to find a nice balance between the flexibility obviously of having my own business and being able to train mainly in the evenings. I'm not really a morning person, so I don't get up into too many early morning sessions, but do a lot of stuff at night.
And having that buy-in from family is vital, isn't it? Is not necessarily to have as cheerleaders. I mean, that's nice, but not sort of having someone going, oh, you're going out again.
Absolutely, you couldn't do it without it, Brad. And I think every Ironman is very fortunate to have people around them to support them. Otherwise, it would be very hard to do.
Absolutely. What's next on the cards for you? What do you still want to achieve? What are some of the plans and long-term goals?
Yeah, well, the rumor is the 70.3 Worlds are going to be back here sort of down under, either in Perth or in Taupo next year. So definitely looking to get along to that and have a good race. And then back to Kona sometime after that and try and do something, you know, a bit better than I did last time. So,
Mel, what's the secret to having the perfect Ironman race?
Do you know what, Brad? I'm not sure there is a perfect Ironman race. So I think the secret is just having a great mindset, to be honest. I went to Roth this year, for example, it was only a few months ago now, back in July. And I wanted to do a PB, and I was only 400 meters into the swim and I was starting to cramp. I was getting to the first turning buoy and things were going wrong. I could tell I wasn't having a good swim, and was at that point tempted to just, you know, pull back and just take it easy for the rest of the day, but decided to, you know, stick with it. And then on the bike, you know, we hit the hills and we hit the headwind, and I wasn't, you know, sitting on sort of average speed that would get me a good bike split, but again, decided to stick with it and push through those moments of doubt. And in the end, had a pretty good bike effort and had a great run and managed to do a PB. So it would have been so easy to give up and to, you know, to be mentally defeated. So I think Ironman is as much a mental and psychological game as it is a physical game. So, you know, the longer the races get, the harder they get on the mind.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, and I tend to agree that there's no such thing as a perfect Ironman race. Even if, I mean, the guys and girls that are out in the front, they go through patches where things aren't quite going according to plan, and it's managing yourself through those that's the tough bit. And as you say, not backing off when things aren't particularly going your way, and trusting in what you've done in the build up to it, that it'll get you to where you're going.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think. You know, I went to a breakfast with some pros back before Ironman Melbourne in 2015, and one of the comments from one of the pros was, in a race as long as Ironman, something will go wrong. You know, it's the race is designed to test you, and it's about how you respond when those things go wrong. And, you know, have a plan, but make sure the plan's a bit flexible. And, you know, if it's not hurting at the sort of 25K mark of the run, you're doing something wrong. So, you know, stick with it.
Yeah, it's supposed to hurt. They're
designed to hurt.
Exactly. That's been my sort of biggest takeaway from an Ironman, is it doesn't matter how fit you are, at some stage in the race, you're going to be hurting, and that's normal.
Yeah, and I've never had a perfect swim. I've had a good bike, but never, you know, I don't think I've had a perfect bike. I've had a couple of runs that I'm not sure that I'll ever beat my run times, but, you know, maybe I will. I never thought I'd beat my run time in Port Elizabeth, but I did in Roth. So, you know, maybe you can keep improving, but there's always little spots you can improve.
And I guess that's what makes this thing so special, is it's because it's so long and there's so many moving parts to it, that to string everything together on the same day that they all are perfect, you've probably got more chance of winning the lotto, and that's what keeps us coming back for more.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think the day you have the perfect race, it'll be hard to back up and go back again, I think.
Absolutely. Well, Mal, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about your individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time on the Kone Age today.
Thanks, Brad. Great to talk.
And that's it for this edition of the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you, too, to our guest today. Thanks to Mel for sharing his story and his journey into the sport of triathlon with us. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it and chatting to Mel. We'll chat to him in a week from now to find out what he's done to improve his Ironman swim. Before I go, if you haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, please do. It's been a little while since I read out one of those reviews. And, yeah. I'm a bit concerned that you haven't left us any reviews, because what it does is it helps get us in front of more people just like you. iTunes really ranks reviews highly in their algorithm, so the more reviews we get, they see it as a bit of a vote of confidence. So if you'd like to help us grow the podcast and give us a two thumbs up, I'd really appreciate it if you left us a review, and leave your social media handles as well so that we can give you a shout out on the socials and say thank you very much for doing that. Before I go, a big thanks to the sponsor. This edition of the podcast was brought to you by Wheel Science. If you're looking for high-performance race wheels at half the price of the big-name brands, then all you need to do is go to this URL, okay? The link is below this podcast as well. It is thekonaedge.com/wheels. And if you use the coupon code KonaEdge, all one word, at checkout, they'll give you 10% discount. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels, and use KonaEdge at checkout to get 10% off your order.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge. We'll be right back.